L-E-T-E-N-E-T.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your big Monday morning flagship edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town Premier League podcast, proudly sponsored by Molecular UK. I'm Mark Heath. I'm joined by Stewie Watson. AJ's having a little lie down today because the Wi-Fi wasn't very good on Saturday, and that stressed him out quite a lot. And Ross is just having a day off because he took loads of pictures and his fingers are tired. But friends, the two big dogs, the two older gentlemen of this podcast are here with you to break down the perfect start for Ipswich Town in the Premier League. One game, one win. We are up and running right from the off, Stewie. How are you? It was a good day, wasn't it, on Saturday?
I'm very, very well, as you can see. Big smile on my face. And that was the vibe from Saturday. It was a lot of fun. You could see in the various bits of fans content that was filmed by Ross, by the club, that people were just buzzing as they left that ground on Saturday. The winner was a massive cherry on top. But even up until that point, I'd liked a lot of what I've seen. It's very encouraging.
Yeah, great day. Let's start by hearing from Gary O'Neill about the win itself. And then obviously we've got loads of talking points because there's so much to chat about from the game. And most of it's positive, Stu. In fact, all of it pretty much is positive. So let's get excited about it in due course. Here is Gary O'Neill talking about first game for him at Portman Road in the Premier League, or indeed as Ipswich Town boss in a competitive game. And he's 100% record, straight off the mark. Lovely.
Hi, Gary. Just congratulations. Up and running as Ipswich boss, up and running in the Premier League. What's your verdict on that?
Pleased. I thought we played pretty well. Premier League's tough, as you saw. Takes everyone giving everything to get us over the line. Thought we deserved to win, probably, on the balance of it. Some real good chances. But just that you see the strength of the group, as in everyone, subs. New signings, players that have been here a while, all pulling together. So, really pleased. It was a good performance, and thankfully we managed to produce a little moment of quality at the end there from a pressing phase to get us to 3 points, which gets us up and running.
Yeah. Did you feel like that goal was coming?
I don't know if I felt like it was coming. I felt like we were still trying to get it. You know, I thought we could have scored a bit earlier. Julio had a couple of good moments. Dizan had a chance. So I felt like we were pushing. The Premier League is tough. You know, we were cruising really at 1-0, not too much threat on the goal. And welcome back to the Premier League. Someone smashes one in the top corner from 25 yards and it's back to square one. But for the group, for the fans, the way the fans responded to that goal, the way they tried to lift the players instantly, the way the players got straight back on task and got straight back into the game was really good. So some good individual bits, but more the power of the group and the fans and Portman Road that managed to get us through to the end of that.
Right, Stu, we're going to talk. We're not going to go kind of forensically through the game because that's a bit dull and it was 2 days ago. So we're going to do talking points and things that are exciting to talk about. But I want to start, first of all, just with the win itself, because I think if you'd have drawn it up like the dream day, it would have been pretty much close to that, wouldn't it? Going 1-0 ahead, get pegged back, and then show character. Not only did they show they can compete in the Premier League, which they very much did on Saturday against a good side, they then go and win it late on, which is a massive feather in the cap at this level of football.
Yeah, absolutely that. If you had your checklist of things you wanted to see on the opening day, it's new boys hitting the ground running and forming some early bonds with the fan base. And they certainly did that. And we'll go through them in due course, I'm sure. Having the mettle to get the result over the line at the end. You go back 2 years ago, Ipswich produced some really highly competitive performances in the early stages of the season, certainly at Portman Road. Couldn't quite get one over the line, could they? Liverpool on the opening day, Fulham, Aston Villa, Man United, I think, came just after the win at Tottenham. But it was 10 games without a victory. and all of a sudden psychologically it's the weight goes on and you're chasing your tail. So to do that at the end was fantastic. And yeah, the boys of old as well, kind of showing that they've improved as well, I think, in many respects, and it all kind of gelling together to do what they did on the opening day against a very settled, stable Sunderland side that only had one new player in there that are preparing to play in the Europa League this season off the back of a seventh place finish. Yeah, as I say, encouraging. We don't want to be getting too carried away. It's only one game, but it feels like a really important tone setter, I would say, for the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, it was interesting. We haven't got the clip, but O'Neill was talking about that after the game, wasn't he? Someone asked him, you know, how big is it from your point of view? And he kind of said, well, I know you will, you know, say it's bigger than it is, sort of thing. But for me, it's just one game, and there's a lot more to come, and it's going to be really tough. So very much keeping his feet on the floor, as I suppose you'd expect. Right, there's only one place to start in terms of talking points, Stewie, and that is the man I'm now calling Electric Nciso. On his second debut for Ipswich Town, he was different gravy, absolute mustard. And we were chatting excitedly about this, I think, walking back to the press room after the game. He felt like he was a level above everyone else on the pitch, didn't he? He was at the heart of everything, super exciting, obviously set up the first goal. That was all him. Almost scored an outrageous goal as well. He was great, wasn't he?
Yeah, electric is the word I used in pretty much every piece of content produced over the weekend, because you could feel that crackle of anticipation in the air every time the ball was at his feet. I wrote in a comment piece when he re-signed that we know he's a difference maker. We know he's got elite technical ability. He's an X-factor player. That's the excitement around Ipswich being able to get him. The big question mark was, is he enough of a team player? In that loan spell last time, it felt like he was just really trying to add to his own individual highlights reel and put himself in the shop window for whatever's next. And will he work hard enough off the ball? There were a few times where he just stopped tracking back during that loan spell. And teammates were calling him out on it, and that was frustrating. Gary O'Neill insisted when he signed, we're getting a different version of Julio Nciso. I've worked really hard on him in the last 6 months at Strasbourg about adding those other sides to his game. And we saw it on Saturday. That's the bit that I love most about this Julio Nciso performance. On the selflessness front, the assist is a prime example of that. Julio Nciso of old, you know, his eyes would have lit up after skipping past two players and going in on goal. No look, square pass for Emerson. To score, and you see the players all run to Nciso afterwards. That's no knock on Emerson, but I think that's them showing him a bit of love for what he's done there. And then the off the ball stuff. He was here, there, everywhere, pressing high, getting in people's faces, getting back. That's the bit I love most about this performance. That's really encouraging for what Julio Nciso can bring to this team going forwards.
Yeah. How would you describe the goal that he almost scored, Stu? I've been trying to explain this to people. So it was essentially, I think it was a cross from Fatawu from the right. And he has his back to goal as the ball comes in and kind of catches it with his right foot. And as he spins, he kind of, it's like a flick on. I don't, how would you describe it?
Yeah, a back to goal spinning flick with the outside of your boot. I don't know. Yeah, it's the cross is sort of slightly behind him. He knows exactly what he's doing. He just manages to sort of fashion a chance on the turn. It was almost a nonchalant flick of the outside of the boot, wasn't it? And if that had gone in, well, I'd been off to a flyer with my hot take, wouldn't I? From the big pre-season predictions where I said Ipswich would have three goal of the month contenders. That would have been a goal of the season contender if that had gone in. That just shows you the confidence that's coursing through his veins at the moment. There was a point in the second half where he slowed up to his marker, went past him, chopped another one, and the crowd were singing, "He's just too good for you." He was almost unplayable at times.
Yeah, back to goal spinning flicks, Stu. I like that. That kind of sums up just how extraordinary an effort it was. Before we hear from Gary O'Neill, how important do you think Nciso is going to be this season? Because we know clearly they've brought in a lot of players who've got experience and can be very solid at the level, but it feels like Nciso might be that kind of extra level of mustard that you need in the Premier League. Do just to kind of elevate games that you might otherwise lose, turn them into draws or draws into wins. He's got that kind of X factor about him, hasn't he?
Yeah. Let's see. He's now got to back it up and do that every week. That's probably a lot of words in his ear going into this first game about you've got to do the other side of the game as well.
Yeah.
And he's wanting to make a big first impression. Now, with that sort of confidence behind him, is he going to keep doing that? That's the consistency part now. I hope so. But in answer to your question, of course, he can be a massive factor. I said it a lot in pre-season. It looked like they were building a squad and a team of grafters. But is that sprinkling of stardust on top who's going to turn, you know, defeats into draws, draws into wins? And Julio Enciso can certainly be that man.
Yeah. Right. Let's hear from Gary Neal about Enciso.
He's top talent. That's why we work so hard to get him, because he's a number 10 that can produce unbelievable quality. But not many 10s in the world are willing to work the way he works. You know, I worked hard with him in Strasbourg around his defensive stuff, and he was excellent stopping Granit Xhaka sort of dictating today. When he beats two players and is in on an open goal, there's no fault of himself. Just Emerson's a better option. I'll pass it to Emerson. You won't find many that can do that sort of all the sides of it like he does. So there's a lot of work still to do with him. He's not quite 100% fit, so we'll keep working with him, get him up to speed with the rest of the lads. But you saw the difference that he can make today. But as well as being a difference maker, he carries his weight and he does the same work as the rest of the team. So excellent signing for us, and pleased with how he played.
There you go, then, Stu. So Gary highlighting the work. And in terms of moving on from Enciso and looking at the rest of the new boys, I want to highlight the whole front four, because all of them ran themselves into the ground, didn't they? Emerson obviously got his goal. That's 3-3 if you count pre-season now. So that's an excellent start for him. Showed the good parts of his game, you know, the physicality, the strength, the pressing. And also Maeda and Fatawu in different ways. Fatawu, I think, first half got a bit frustrated. There are times when he wasn't getting the ball. And he was kind of pulling his shorts up and that kind of stuff. But second half, he was much better and showed, you know, the excitement I think I'm kind of expecting from him. He nutmegged someone, didn't he? Whenever he had a defender in front of him, it felt like he was going to beat him, and he put some dangerous balls into the box. Almost set up Maeda, actually, didn't he, for a goal. If Maeda had been like 2 inches taller, it would have been a goal. And Maeda, we've said the effort is just non-stop. The guy is so fit. I think he played like 67 games last season, and he never stopped running this game either. He's just constant motion, isn't he? From a whole front four, I was really impressed with all of them, and mostly because of the work they put in, not only on the ball, but also off the ball. They were really grafting, weren't they?
Exactly that. Yeah. Fatu, I had similar fears to Julio Enciso. Exciting. Someone who can get the crowd off their feet. But is he going to do the other side of the game? Those fears were allayed with this performance. On the ball, it was hit and miss with him. There were times he blazed past people and made things happen. There were times he gave it away, certainly in the first half. But he got back and he pulled his weight defensively. I got a couple of notes where there was a moment in the first half where him and Lukic threw themselves into tackles. There was a moment in the second half, if you remember, a really dangerous counter-attacking opportunity from a corner. And it's Fatawu, you know, throwing himself in to stop that. So that's the bit of his game that encouraged me the most. Maeda, we knew, was going to be a grafter. Everything the Celtic fans told us is that he will run and run and get in people's faces. And he was exactly that. He was just here, there and everywhere, picking people's pockets. I'd love to see his heat map, the yards that he covers in the game, and the intensity of the yards he covers as well. He's, you know, it's constant sprinting with him as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Said it a couple of times. I don't want it to keep banging on about it. It's now just, can he add the sort of the elite technical final third stuff? Had a chance, didn't he, where Emerson nodded it back across goal, and maybe he could have gone with it with his head. I don't know. Maybe I'd need to see it from another angle. But he's going to give absolutely everything to this team. And if you do that, you've got fans on board from day one. So, all that front four worked themselves really hard. Emerson as well gets his goal. And then there was a moment in that first half where he went past two, didn't he? Nice bit of strength, held them off, knocked it one side, ran the other. Mark, I turned to Callum, who was sitting to my left, and I said, they've signed R9. They've signed R9. maybe getting a little bit carried away, but you know, you need those little just first moments that capture the hearts and minds of people, and each of them did something in this game that kind of got the crowd instantly on board. So, Gary O'Neill said he's not fully fit. He's still a little bit raw. If that's what he's producing from kind of a standing start, it's exciting to where he could go.
Maeda, for me, obviously, I've watched him a couple of times now. This is the first time he's played significant minutes. And as I say, the guy, he is just so fit. He didn't slow down. He never stopped running, as you say. He's got this really low to the ground running style, hasn't he? He's got a very low centre of gravity. He's got big legs, the lad. I really enjoyed watching him. And we had actually a row of Japanese journalists in front of us, didn't we? Who were there, obviously, to cover Dyson. And I actually asked one of them, you know, how big of a deal is he in Japan? And they said, well, you know, he's quite a big deal. He's not as big a deal as Mitoma, for example. But, you know, he's obviously well known in Japan. And I said, well, how do you think he'll do in the Premier League? And they said, well, I think he'll be fine. He's got the qualities. I think he'll be fine. So certainly a glowing recommendation from them as well, who's followed his career. Let's hear from Gary O'Neill about Emerson now, shall we?
Yeah, Emerson was good. I thought we've sort of thrown him in quite a lot. He's obviously bought as a bit of a project, but someone that we think can help us now as well. And you sort of saw that today. He can help us now. And then there are some bits that he still needs to tidy up on. But gave Ballard a tough time, I thought. Managed to fight him physically, run away from him, worked his socks off, got his goal. So now I was pleased with Emerson. I thought to be as young as he is, like age-wise and game-wise, and be able to perform the way he did in the Premier League today was impressive.
All right, let's move on to the other new boy. So lots of people making their debuts. And the next one I want to highlight, I think I'm sure you're going to agree with me, is Saša Lukić, who I thought was everything again that we kind of expected from him. Kind of understatedly ran the game from midfield. He physically, by the way, a couple of times we got confused with him and Jacob Greaves. Similar sort of size and look, which I guess is a good thing from someone who's going to be box-to-box in midfield. He's got that physical aspect as well. Not obviously as, you know, flashy as Nciso, or, you know, didn't get a goal like Emerson, that kind of thing. But in his own way, I thought that he was excellent as well, Stu.
Yeah, I've made some Sam Morsy comparisons with Saša Lukić going into the season in terms of he's got that real competitive fire in him. Someone who picks up bookings, as we said, combative, aggressive, but also really press resistant. Someone you can give the ball in tight situations and he'll look after it really well. There was a prime example of that in the second half when he was surrounded, didn't really have any options on. The crowd was shouting, help him. And he managed to weave his way out of trouble. I really like the fact that when the going's not good, he's someone that doesn't drop his head. At the end, he fluffed a cross seconds before he gets the assist for the winner. And he sort of threw his head up in frustration at himself because he held such high standards. But within seconds, he's the one jumping on the loose pass. And don't underestimate the weight of the ball for Jack Clark as well. It's those little things that make players at this level stand out, the weight of pass. And every time he doesn't make a teammate work for the pass. He puts it just exactly where they want it. He looks like he's going to be the glue in this team that sort of bonds it all together. I think his football IQ, his knowledge of where to be is really good, much like we talked about Massimo Luongo filling gaps and reading danger. He was very good there, dropping into little pockets at times. So another one who's got off to a very encouraging start.
Didn't get booked either, from memory, which is good.
Nope.
Given his propensity to get yellow cards. Right, the other two new boys that were in the side then, Sue, were giant keeper. You have to say giant keeper when you refer to Kel Sherp and Issa Diop, obviously, in the heart of defence. What did you make of those? Sherpin had a very nervy moment early on where he basically dallied on the ball and almost gave it away, and it's heart and mouth, very much so. But then he kind of recovered, and I thought he had a solid game. So he made one save, particularly from a header. I can't remember who it was from, which is a nice save. Siddiqui, really nice save. Solid handling throughout, I thought. Didn't have a lot to do. I mean, that's another good sign, isn't it? Given that Sunderland didn't actually create much from open play. Their goal obviously came from a set piece. Issa Diop, though, I would say of the new boys, maybe looked the shakiest. Stu, is that fair? He had a couple of moments where he made some mistakes. He obviously gave away the free kick that led to the goal for Sunderland. A couple of other times he looked a little bit wobbly, I thought, which is a surprise for someone of his calibre and how well he's played in pre-season. How would you assess those two?
I think that's a fair assessment of both, to be honest. Issa Diop was looking really classy in pre-season. Had a couple of shaky moments in this game. It's a silly, needless foul on Xhaka that gets punished for the goal. It was a moment in the second half that could have been punished when he looked a little bit flat-footed and Brobbie didn't take on the shot first time. So we'll put that one to one side. I don't think that's him. Thankfully, it didn't matter. Sherpin, slightly nervy start, as you say. He almost got pressed within the first few minutes. There was one where there was sort of a back pass or a ball came to him and Diop, I think it was Diop who sort of gestured for him to come and get it. And he was a little bit slow coming off his line. You're thinking, uh-oh, how's this going to pan out? But his response under such pressure was really good. That save that you mentioned, great reaction stop to kind of flip it up over the bar. His kicking, I think, can improve, but his throwing
is certainly
very impressive. I mean, he was bowling the ball out with those big long arms, deep inside the opposition half, wasn't he? He can throw a ball. So that was good. Came and confidently punched the ball over traffic in injury time while they were trying to see out the victory. He was fine. He's probably more than fine, actually. He was okay. So he'll be pleased to get that first one under his belt.
So you suggested after that throw that he did that he can throw the ball further than most people can kick it, and I think that was fair because literally from halfway inside his own area, he overhanded it. I think it went over the kind of semicircle in the other half, didn't it? Huge throw, so potentially a bit of a weapon there from Sherpin.
Any questions over the goal on his behalf? I don't think so. For me, no. I think it's a really
just
good free kick.
Just a great goal, isn't it? Yeah.
The fact that he has got those long arms, he almost kind of got to it, didn't he? But I think you just have to peg that one as a piece of brilliance from Angulo.
Premier League, innit? That's what happens, as Gary O'Neill said. Right, before we move on to obviously the match winner, Cracker Jack, Jackson Ladd, etc., I think it's worth also reflecting on the old guard, because although there are a lot of new players playing, obviously players who maybe had scars from the last Premier League season, which Gary O'Neill made a point of in his post-match presser, how well they did as well. Interesting. I mean, Dal Roche at right-back, should we start there, Chewy?
Yep.
Because we both kind of had reservations about him in that position. And Gary O'Neill said after the game, look, I need to get him in the side. I need to get him and Diop in the side. And there were times in the first half where my concerns around him are his pace, essentially. At the highest level of football, has he got the pace to live with the kind of wingers he's going to be coming up against right back? And a couple of times he got burnt, wasn't there, in the first half? But as Gary said, he also brings like a physicality and an ability in the air to that role that you maybe wouldn't expect from a right back. What was your assessment overall of Dara in that position? And do you continue to have concerns about him being played there, if that's indeed what happens all season?
I had a chat with Luke Chambers walking from the press room to the press box, and I said, Ipswich Town captain playing at right back who'd prefer to be playing centre back. That sounds like a familiar tale, doesn't it? And he had a little chuckle about that. Dara was very diplomatic with his response on Friday when we asked him about how do you feel playing there, and he sort of went, I'll play wherever I'm asked. I'd rather be at centre back. That's where he feels most comfortable. This kind of summed up both the hopes and fears for him playing in this position. As you say, in the early stages, there was a couple of times where he doesn't look entirely comfortable when he's got a winger running at him. But he also gives you an extra level of aerial presence and physicality in the back line. So when long throws and corners and crosses are coming into your box, it's an extra strength there. there was something almost old school about some of the big switches out to him. He'd push on onto the halfway line and just stick it on Dara's head for a flick on. And I think that's, you saw Thomas Meunier, the Sunderland right back, after the game talking about there was something quite simple and basic about Ipswich's approach, which some people might balk at, given all the stuff we've just been waxing lyrical about. But that what I've just described, sticking it out onto Dara's head on the halfway line and flicking it on, yeah, that was simple. And yes, it was quite effective at times as well. So his leadership, you want it in the team. They've signed Diop to play that right-sided centre-back role. I can see the logic about just trying to get him in the team. There will be times where maybe it will get exploited and exposed. We'll have to see. But hopefully the good will outweigh the bad with Dara O'Shea playing that position.
He certainly won a lot of headers, didn't he, on that kind of right-hand side. And then the other one I really want to highlight was Leif Davis, Stu. I thought in terms of his defensive work, there was one extraordinary moment, wasn't it, in the first half where it looked like Robbie was... What's his name? Bobby, isn't it? I can't remember how to say his name. Anyway, he was through, wasn't he, on goal? And we were like, oh, no! And then, but Leif is like a steam engine chasing him down and then hurls himself. He makes a huge block, and it's the sort of thing that immediately gets the crowd up, wasn't it? And I thought generally he was superb. What are you giggling at? Me not being able to
No, I just love that. It was one of my favourite moments of this game. It's just making me smile. And I talked about all these different things that happened in the game that are things that make you smile. And that is seeing Leif. Well, and Gary O'Neill said this after the game, it's natural that we're all going to be talking about the new signings, but let's not forget about the old guard, the ones that have been there, the ones that really fought to get Ipswich back in this division. Leif is now in season number 5 at Ipswich Town. The last kind of key piece of the Band of Brothers team that remains. And that really set the tone, didn't it? Brian Brobby, who's a one-man wrecking ball, charging away on goal, and Leif was brilliant. He could have, you know, he could easily have clipped his heels, but he managed to slow himself down, not commit the foul, and then throw himself into a lunging block and jumped up and gave it a two-fisted sort of roar of celebration to the north stand. That set the tone for the graft of the team, and I just love seeing that. I thought, and that wasn't the only time he did it. Again, the question mark on Leif is, defensively, is he good enough for the Premier League? And by his own admittance, that was the side of the game he needs to improve upon. Well, if this game's any evidence, you know, he's come a long way since the last Prem season.
And just very quickly, just to tick everyone else off, just so we've talked about everyone, I thought Jacob Greaves very solid. We know he's a favourite of O'Neill. And Marcelino Nunes, who obviously started because Florentino Luis wasn't quite fit. And assessing the team beforehand, you think, well, is that the kind of weak link? But I thought he did. I thought he did a good job. He was everywhere, wasn't he? He never stopped running. So in terms of a performance, I thought that was probably better than expected for me.
Yeah, I was surprisingly impressed by Marcelino Nunez. Mm. You're right. I looked at that starting lineup. Florentino Luis misses out through injury, calf, I think that is. I know it is. And Nunez starts at central midfield, and it's off the back of him playing and looking far more effective as a 10 in the Championship promotion season. And it's on the back of him looking a little rusty in pre-season, if I'm honest. You're thinking, is the balance of that midfield, him and Lukic, going to be quite right? And he was everything that all the other players were in terms of he ran, he made a big block in his own box in the second half. A couple of times he was like pressing the goalkeeper at the other end of the pitch. He was good. He was good, though. It was a real team effort, and he was very much in amongst it all.
Yeah, right then. Let's talk about the finishers, shall we? The ones who came on and won the game. Jack Clark obviously got the winner. In a perfect way, but we were sitting there, weren't we, Sue, and saying 1-1, really good performance. But have they got? Are we now going to see the levels of the Premier League? Have they got the people on the bench to bring on and go for the win? And you would say, look, comparing the caliber of players that the sides brought on, that is where Town are still playing catch up, isn't it? That's where they probably still need a couple of signings, because you've got the front four that came on, Stu Brakpom. Obviously, Jack Clark. Who else came on? Casey McAteer and Sindra, which you, without being too unkind, you'd say they are not like terrifying subs to bring on, are they, in the Premier League? So is that still something you'd say is something they need to work on depth-wise? They've obviously got, what, just over 10 days or so left in the transfer window. To me, it seems they still definitely need that striker. They still definitely need that kind of creative midfielder as well. It didn't turn out to be decisive in this game because obviously they went on and won it. But going forward, I think they do still need to level up on that depth and the bench, the people they can bring in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I still think there are a couple of missing pieces of the jigsaw away from me starting to truly believe that that they'll be okay this season, but there's still time, and Ashton, O'Neill, etc. are bullish about being able to do that over the coming days. I shared your fears going into those final 10-15 minutes. I looked at the changes that were made. We've mentioned the players that come on for Ipswich, who it is a view shared by many, going, are they elite game changers in the Premier League? And these are the standards that we're talking about now. But, you know, Sindra is the Championship record signing. Casey McAteer, £11.5 million. Not bad subs to bring on, are they? I think that's a sign of where the kind of the water levels have risen from. But Sunderland, by contrast, brought on five players. Four of them played at the World Cup this summer. Talby, Alderete came on in defence, who's normally a starter for them. Isidore, Diarra, good players. And it felt like the energy levels just dipped a bit in the team, having kind of emptied the tank. The energy levels dipped a little bit in the crowd as well. And my thought was, please just get something to show for your efforts today. All the good that we've just described. Please don't let this be a repeat of 2 years ago, where there were so many games where Ipswich got themselves in great positions. I think there was a stat that if games finished on 70 minutes, Ipswich would have comfortably stayed up. Bournemouth springs to mind at Portman Road, where they were leading that game, and then the subs, Bournemouth turned to their stronger bench and won it 2-1, and that happened quite a few times. So that was my fear. I thought if anyone was going to win it late on, it might be Sunderland. And I think they scored a ton of last-minute goals last season as well. So for Ipswich to go and get it, as I say, was a massive cherry on top. I would have been speaking in the same sort of tones today had that game finished 1-1.
Yeah,
in terms of what I'd seen and what I was encouraged by. So as I said right at the very start, for Ipswich to get the winner was just a huge, huge cherry on top of the cake.
And it comes from a man who we're used to seeing come on and win games, Jack Clark, super sub. We've had a lot of chat around him this pre-season, Stu, in terms of whether or not he can compete, you know, be next level in the Premier League. Clearly a talented player, but has he got those kind of extra other bits you need in the Premier League to succeed? He came on as the 10, didn't he, to begin with, and then moved out left when Maeda came off. And he goes and gets a classic Jack Clark goal, Stu. Last minute against his former side, gets Town win number one in the Premier League in the first game of the season. Couldn't have written it much better.
Yeah, perhaps it's written in the stars, because Jaden Philogene, had he been fit, who knows how those substitutions would have played out. Would Clark have come on? Would he have certainly ended the game on the left? I don't know. But Philogene misses out with an ankle injury that he's picked up in the final warm-up in Germany. Jack Clark ends up finishing the game on the left against his former club. And as you say, trademark Jack Clark finish. I love the way there's very few players that dribble almost exclusively with the outside of the foot. He kind of tippy toes across the turf, doesn't he? He glides, he gets the ball. And it's what makes him so difficult to deal with for defenders, because it's just little soft touches with the outside of the boot. They don't know which way he's going to go. He uses the defenders as a shield and just bends it around them. Goalkeeper's blind, and the roof is lifted. Portman Road erupts. It had to be him. I think he had in the back of his mind a respectful celebration were he to score. But when you score a last minute winner on the opening day of the Premier League season, your first Premier League goal, all that goes out the window. I know Sunderland fans will not be happy about it, but can you blame him?
No, absolutely not. And I really hate it when players don't celebrate against former clubs, because that's kind of, well, anyway, I've talked about that enough.
Yeah.
But Stu, I'm afraid I broke Press Box protocol at that point. I jumped out of my seat and pointed at the sky. I'm not proud of myself. I've done that twice in my career. I think the other time was when Fabio Wardley landed that big knockout shot against Hooney when he's miles behind at Portman Road. So again, I jumped. I think there's footage of me doing that on TalkSport somewhere and jumping into the air when he landed that shot. So again, I apologise for breaking press box etiquette. Poor from me, and I'll try and do better. But it was a dramatic moment. It was great. Let's hear from Jack Clark now, shall we?
Jack, what a way to start life back in the Premier League, eh?
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. It's sort of been a long 7 weeks waiting and sort of chomping at the bit a little bit for the opportunity and to play back in the Premier League, and obviously we got it today and we took it.
Yeah, I mean, to win this game on opening day, we know how hard it was last time round to get off to the start. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. We obviously, it took us a while to get going last time. I don't think the schedule really helped us too much last time in the Premier League, and we sort of felt like we were good in games and coming out on like the wrong end of certain scenarios. And like, obviously it's a ruthless league, like you give teams half a chance and all of a sudden you're walking off in despair. So we knew we had to obviously put that right coming into this season and stay in games as long as possible, and we did that today.
Let's cut to the end, because that's the why we're here, your moment to go and win that game. I mean, that was a fantastic moment for you, surely.
Yeah, it felt like it'd been a long time coming, almost. Didn't quite manage to do it last time in the Premier League, and probably had a few opportunities to do so as well. So yeah, it was more relief than anything else, and hopefully it can help me and the team kick forward.
Traditional Jack Clark goal as well, left wing, cut inside, that nice finish.
Yeah, you could say that, yeah. It's become a bit of a trademark over the years. So yeah, probably no better way to do it.
And a weird feeling, I'm sure, to do it against Sunderland, the club that gave you so much as well.
Yeah, sort of bittersweet. Like, even now it's not really sunk in too much in terms of how surreal of a moment it was. I sort of like had it in the back of my head, like coming to today, obviously if I did get the opportunity and did, I'd try like keep it as respectful as possible. And I don't know if the moment or the adrenaline sort of took over, but it is what it is.
It is what it is, that classic football cliche. I saw Sunderland fans, by the way, too, saying, how did we not stop that? We've seen him do that so many times for us. We knew exactly what he was going to do, but there we go. The other person just to mention in terms of the new boys who came on as a sub, Abdul Utara, Stu, who we got a little look at, came on for Nunes, didn't he? Played in midfield. He is not tall, but I would say he's built like a little tank. Certainly seems like he's got the physical attributes to be a factor in the Premier League, and clearly there's a conversation about where he's going to play, which we may have when we start talking about Leicester. But did you kind of see enough of him to have at least an opening thought on him as a player for Ipswich Town?
Can't remember what minute he came on in the game. I'll have to remind myself while I speak, but it was relatively late, wasn't it? 80th minute. So yeah, Not enough of a sample size to make too much of a judgment on him beyond what you've kind of pointed out. You get that initial kind of look at him on a football pitch. He's not the tallest, but physically looks
solid.
Looks strong, solid. Yeah, I think that's probably the best way of putting it. Gary O'Neill said pre-match, when I asked him if you got a role in mind, he's someone who's played right back, left back, midfield, further forwards. It was a bit of a wry smile. Yes, I have, but I'm not going to tell you today. You'll find out in due course. He comes on in central midfield in this one. Do we read too much into that? Ipswich are a little bit short on midfielders at the moment. I don't know. But he says he's surprised teammates with how good he's been in training in those first few days. And, you know, they've spent a fair bit of money to get him. He's only 20, so we'll find out a bit more. I think we'll probably get our first proper look at him tomorrow night at Portman Road.
Indeed we will, and we'll talk about that, obviously, a nice occasion in store at Portman Road tomorrow night. Just before we move on to that, Stu, any more notes from the game? I want to highlight, in terms of the last-minute celebrations, I turned from the celebrating players who were on the pitch down to the bench, and Abdul Fatu went absolutely mental. He like ran halfway onto the pitch. He was jumping in the air, punching the air. It clearly meant a huge amount to him, which is great to see as a new signing. Anything else from you, Stu, in terms of the general nature of the win, how important it was, and maybe kind of as we touched on the importance, I guess, of the last few days of the transfer window in shoring up that depth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it will change anything in terms of recruitment, but it's not going to harm, is it, when you're trying to get persuade some ambitious targets to join the football club? This is, you know, if they've been watching on from afar and they're seeing the vibe and the togetherness and the spirit of the football club, that's not gonna harm, is it? So that's great. And as I said to you before, just the general vibe around the place at the moment is really sort of bouncy and up. And Gary O'Neill said the energy within the training ground was really good. You expect managers to say that, but the way he sort of spoke about that and the tone and the expression of it made me feel like it was really genuine. And I think that showed on the pitch. You can tell when a team feels quite sort of bonded and together. And so for them to have achieved that in such a short space of time is great. And yeah, there's people already saying, we're already people talking about who their favourite players are, and I really like this team, and there's already a feeling of connection, and that's going to be needed. There are going to be some difficult days ahead. They might come in the next few days or so. Go to Old Trafford on Saturday. Beware the wounded animal there. It's Liverpool under the lights at Portman Road, who just about squeaked a draw yesterday. And there's belief. There's a bit of bullishness about now Ipswich, which is great. So it's mad, isn't it? We went into opening day saying, oh, this feels big. Like,
yeah.
Normally you start talking about must-win territory deep into seasons, and there was almost conversation, not must-win, but like need something here with the games that are coming to kill off that narrative of when's that first win going to come and how's this season going to be? They're off to a great start, and it gives them a chance. It gives them a platform.
Absolutely. And I suppose the other thing just to mention, Stu, is kind of uncomfortably, AI's prediction for the game was spot on. 2-1 Emerson to score first. It said that Sunderland would score from a set piece. That happened. And also said Nciso would get the second goal. And he very nearly did with outrageous spinning back to goal flick.
Wow.
So I'm slightly concerned about our jobs going forward. If AI can accurately predict stuff like that, we'll have to see for the rest of the season. But anyway.
Well, just probably they've got enough. Certainly they've got enough audio of our voices now. So we'll just get AI can probably
just do the pod.
Just get AI just to do this on our behalf now, can't we?
Oh, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I'm not going to be presenting that to the shadowy NewsQuest figures, I don't think. All right, Stu, let's move on, shall we? Leicester City, the visitors tomorrow night in the Carabao Cup. And it's a nice fixture, isn't it, Stu? It's a beautiful draw. Clearly, the main narrative around it is the return of Wes Burns and Connor Chaplin, legends of this parish. And you ask Gary O'Neill after the game about, you know, that game itself and possibility of changes. And he used a great term. He said, I'm desperate to beat Leicester. I'm desperate to beat Leicester. I hate it when my teams lose. So I just want to make sure we win the game. What are your opening thoughts on this one? Because obviously there's a chat around how he tinkers with the starting 11. But in terms of the game itself, what would normally be a Mickey Mouse Cup game that no one really cares about, has got kind of a nice feel about it, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. In the same way that perhaps it was written in the stars that Jack Clarke scores the goal, perhaps it was written in the stars that Leicester City coming to Portman Road was to come out the hat for this one. Connor Chaplin hasn't been fit at the start of the season, but listening to Russell Martin, it sounds like he might have a chance for this one. Wes got his first goal for Leicester at the weekend. And they, you know, quite rightly get the send-off that they deserve. I know Wes kind of did get it on the last day of the season because we were unsure whether he was staying, and he came off to a standing ovation clapping all four sides. Connor hasn't really had that. So it will be nice that they get the send-off and the love that they deserve from the Ipswich Town fans. That can all happen prior to the game. And then when it starts, all of that gets forgotten about in the same way that it did with Sam Morsy when he came back with Bristol City. And they will expect no less. It's going to be interesting to see what this game throws up, because Leicester City have had a torturous start to the season under Russell Martin. They've managed to, in the same way, do you remember when Ipswich went down to League One and I spoke to various journalists who'd covered Blackburn, Sheffield United, Leicester, big clubs that had done their time in League One and taken a bit of time to maybe escape it. And they said, trust me, you'll get your moment where your eyes are wide open to how difficult this league is. And we went, yeah, League One, it's going to be fun. We're going to go to new grounds and we're going to win loads of games. Look at the players we've still got. Yeah, some have left, but we've still got great players. They've conceded a late goal to draw at Notts County on the opening day, and they were booed off after losing 2-1 at home to Burton on Saturday. Welcome to League One. Gary O'Neill says they're going to come to Portman Road looking to leave some marks on us. Yeah. So, interesting game in store.
Yeah, my wife's not happy. Russell Martin already talking about having honest conversations in the dressing room after two games, which is a bit of a warning sign, isn't it? How about Townsend, Stu? Because O'Neill was emphatic. I'm desperate to beat Leicester. And for me, that's music to my ears because they've just got a great win to start the season. Opportunity to get another win, yes, in the cup, but winning is a habit and keep that kind of good feeling going into Old Trafford on Sunday. What do you reckon he might do with the side? Because I'm going to ask you to try and, or both of us now, have a little game of trying to pick the starting 11, because clearly there will be changes. You'd expect there to be changes. But how many and where do you reckon?
I think it's going to be mass rotation. And I kind of said to Gary O'Neill, was talking about how much had gone into that performance on Saturday. And we've talked about the graft and the work ethic. He's talked also about how certain players aren't fully there in terms of fitness. And Ciso came off with cramp. Emerson is one that they've said hasn't had the same kind of level of off-season as some of the other players. So there will be plenty rested with a trip to Super Sunday game at Old Trafford to come. Mm-hmm. But it will still be a strong team that gets put out by Ipswich Town. Certainly, you know, a team that is more than capable of beating a down on their luck League One opposition in front of a buoyant home crowd. So, do you want me to run through a potential team?
Yeah, I think so, because there is obviously a lot of interest around it. I'd be interested to get your take as to who stays in and who dips out.
Christian Walton in goal. Gary O'Neill said that was a really difficult decision for him to make. Opening day, he's got a new goalkeeper that they've spent a decent amount of money on, but he's also very respectful of Christian Walton being Players' Player of the Year last season. So I think that was a tough call for him to make. So Christian, having missed a bit of pre-season with a foot injury, will start this one. Darnell Furlong at right back, who we talked about being Mr. Reliable last season in the Championship. No problems there. Cedric Kipre will be one of the centre-halves, undoubtedly. Who partners him will be interesting. Does Dara O'Shea get his centre-back itch scratched in this game? Someone who, you know, is very robust and can turn out lots of games, possibly. Or does he go again with Diop? I don't know. Left-back, really, it's Leif Davis is the only proper out-and-out option there at the moment. Watara can play there, but I think he'll probably play central midfield alongside Cameron Humphreys. They're the two I've got sort of in the middle of the park. And then a front four, probably the ones that sort of came off the bench at the weekend, which would be McAteer, Valeri Gelli, Jack Clark and Chuba Akpom. And then it's a question as to whether some of those that are on the fringes didn't make the squad at the weekend. Are they involved in this, or if there's thoughts, potential for them to leave, is there any point kind of risking them and then worrying about sort of getting injured and moves being called off? People like Anis Mameti, Chio Ogbonne, Ali Alhamadi will kind of fall into that bracket. I mean, Gary O'Neill talked about Anis being probably his toughest call to make in terms of not making the 20-man squad at the weekend, how much he'd worked so hard in pre-season. Talk that he might leave on loan. So that there's my thoughts on the 11. There's plenty of changes in there, but that's still a pretty decent side, I would suggest.
Yeah, I did wonder if Utara might be the one to step in for Leif Davis at left back.
Could be
the fact that there's no kind of natural backup there still. But as you say, midfield is also a bit short, isn't it?
Given that could be. Already. Yeah, Florentino's not fit for this one. They said they're not gonna risk him. Calf injury, as I said earlier, but hopeful that he'll be back involved in time for United. Philogene, still out with an ankle issue. He was in a boot, seen in a boot, protective boot outside the ground at the weekend. Matasiwa was described as being close.
Yeah.
After the game, but I'd be very surprised if, having had no preseason at all, he's maybe bench at best, but I doubt it. So it's not a bad team, is it? It's, you know, it's a core of a team that got promoted last season, the new signing in there as well.
And we want to win it, don't we, Stu? I know it's only the Carabao Cup, but off the back of what they've just done at the weekend, if they go and lose this now, it'd feel like a bit deflating, wouldn't it?
Why can't Ipswich go really deep into the Carabao Cup? Yes, I know it's been kind of almost exclusively won by the big boys, and when you get to the latter stages, they tend to take over. But Ipswich could go on they're a Premier League club now, and they could go on a good run in this. We always have the debate about whether it's a help or a hindrance going deeper into the cups. And it's in these early stages of the season where you start getting a few midweek games in there. But they're trying to build a really good squad. There's going to be some more players to come in. Why not? I know in recent years it's been a bit of a nothing competition, out on pens to Bromley, out on pens to Wimbledon. They lost at home to Colchester and Newport, going a little bit further back in the first rounds. The only one that's kind of bucked that trend was the year, if you remember, they had the big comeback win against Wolves, where Jack Taylor scored the screamer, and then eventually they went out to Fulham in the fourth round. But why not? I love the attitude, as you say, of Gary O'Neill, just saying he's desperate to win. He wants to win games of football. At the moment, this is a new team, a new manager, a new era, and it's about sort of getting that feel-good factor sort of snowballing down the hill, and another win tomorrow night would help that.
100%. If they go to Old Trafford with two wins in the back pocket already this kind of early in the season, I think that's a perfect preparation, as you say. See, Man United lost at the weekend, no one saw that coming. So if they can go and put the pressure on Old Trafford, fantastic. Stu, just I suppose before we go, we should probably just talk about transfer stuff. Window closes at 11 o'clock September the 1st. So what's that, a week on Tuesday, isn't it?
Week tomorrow, yeah.
They still obviously need to move players out. You've mentioned a few of them there, Mometi, chief amongst them, and he's been linked with Derby County. Obviously, Jack Clark linked with Middlesbrough. And I know you're doing some digging on that. And clearly, the Palacios stuff is still going on in the background in terms of potential signings. What's your feeling on things as we stand now? Who do you think are going to be? Is it three they need to basically trim or not register?
I think it's still, they're up to 28 now with Ben Johnson and George Hurst having left in terms of senior pros. Syndra and Watara don't count towards that because of their age. So they're at 28 senior players. The limit is 25. Up until the window shuts, you can keep changing. You have to register a 25-man squad game by game, and then you can change it for the next. So it's pretty fluid. But by the time the window shuts, you obviously have to name your squad for the first half of the season. So as it stands, three have got to go. If they're looking to add, and Gary O'Neill says he wants to still strengthen in defence, midfield and attack, so add three more on top. That means six need to make way. And we've mentioned a few of the ones on the fringes. Ali Alhamadi has seen a move away collapse. We'll have to see what happens with him. Going forwards, Ogbene is clearly someone that will move on, you would imagine. And then there's some other conversations around once a midfielder, if a midfielder comes in, does that free up Cameron Humphreys to move on? Probably. And then there'll be some more difficult ones, like an Anis Mometi. Like, dare I say it, even a Jack Clark, which people are aghast at after he scored the winner at the weekend, top goal scorer last season. But with Jaden Philogene back in the picture, albeit this ankle injury clouding the issue slightly, you know, with Maeda as well on the left, do they need to carry all three of those? I don't know. I know that's not gone down well with people, the notion of Jack Clark leaving. Middlesbrough credited with interest. Talk of a loan there. I don't know what that would do for Ipswich. Is that just... I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've said all summer that I'm not sure about Jack Clark in the Premier League, and I haven't really changed my opinion. Yes, it was a great moment for him on Saturday, but I do still worry about him having that, you know, the requisite physicality, athleticism that you need in the Premier League. He's a great footballer, but does he have the other stuff that you need to be successful in the Premier League? I don't know. But I can't see the sense of a loan, Stu. It would surely make sense if they're going to do it. They need to get some money back for him. And I can see him going to a kind of top-end championship club as a big signing late in the window for whoever gets him, and Town get a big chunk of money from it. That would make sense to me. So there's ways of looking at it,
isn't there? There's, you know, financially Ipswich are splashing the cash. They're pushing the limits, as we know, with the financial fair play rules in their current guys. At some point, you have to start sort of player trading, and profit making needs to come into it for it to be sustainable. Jack Clark is someone that you could make probably a profit on of the 15 million that the Ipswich Town have spent. So they might consider that side of things. They've got to consider the left-sided options. A loan, is it a loan with a view? I guess a loan keeps things open a little bit. So if you go down, you know you've got a top championship player still in the building. I don't know. I don't know what their thinking is on that one, but I wouldn't rule it out.
And obviously, as I said, you're doing some digging, seeing what's happening. Was that your phone just going off?
It's a call I probably need to respond to.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to take that, Stu, I can wrap up, and we can take our leave. So we've got some.
I mean, I can quickly. I think we're nearly there at the hour mark. If you want to go through, do you want to quickly buzz through the rest of the transfer stuff, and then I'll take my leave.
Go for it, mate.
As we say, Gary O'Neill says he was asked, is striker the priority last week? He said, no, not necessarily. Clearly, they want to add someone to lessen the load on Emerson. He likes Tuber Akpom, but they want another one. So we'll see what happens there. Gabriel Jesus has been mentioned. That seems to be ambitious in terms of the reported money he's on, but it depends how desperate he is to play. That would be two Brazilians up front, which would be quite something, wouldn't it? Liam Delap, his name won't go away. Lots of Premier League clubs being linked to him. Chelsea seem to be wanting a ridiculous amount for him off the back of a poor debut season. So they want a striker. They clearly want a top playmaker midfielder with Ezequiel Palacios at Leverkusen. Talks still rumbling on. I need to get the very latest on that situation. But, you know, clearly the two clubs have there's a bit of a standoff in terms of fee. Mm-hmm. Will that get over the line eventually? We shall see. And I think they want to add a defender as well. What type? I don't know. We talked about Leaf not having a proper backup there. Do they get someone who can play centre-half and left-back? We'll have to see. So there's going to be things that are going to happen in. There's clearly going to have to be things that happen on the out front. And we're reaching the business end of the transfer window now. Things are going to really start to hot up over this next week.
Yeah, we know the striker is not going to be Brielle Embolo, Stu, who signed for Atlanta United, as you suggested he would.
I don't know where those kind of reports came from of Ipswich trying to hijack that deal, but, you know, I said it at the time, that was news to Ipswich when it was, the deal's off and Ipswich are back in the party. There was no kind of attempts to hijack that. I get the feeling maybe Ipswich's name might have been used to maybe strengthen negotiations there. But he was one that was on a long list at the start of strikers. It became pretty clear that he was going to Atlanta. So, as I reported at the time, that wasn't one Ipswich sort of had right at the top of their priority list of recent weeks. Still trying to find out who the top targets are at. I've mentioned a couple of the names that are floating about. There'll be plenty of plates spinning. Yeah. And I'm sure there's names that are not out there in the ether at the moment that they're looking at and working on.
Yeah. Okay then, mate. Let's take our leave, shall we? You've got a phone call you need to take. Just a reminder then, friends, Kings of Anglia app and website up and running now. Thanks to everyone who stopped me, by the way, at the game on Saturday and said how much they're enjoying the app. Still just £2 for 2 months or £29 for a year. Sign up on the website to get those offers. Some people have been saying who signed up through Apple, for example, that it's not £2 for 2 months. That's correct. If you go through Apple, it'll be £3.99. That's the standard fee. If you want the offer, you have to go through the website, and that's really the way to do it. £2 for 2 months, £39 for a year, will be £3.99 per month normally, or £39 for a year. But thanks for all the positive feedback about that. We know the live blog is still an issue. We're working to resolve that in terms of pull down to a fresh functionality. Just a reminder, of course, to support our sponsors, use the code KOA10 at molecular-uk.com. ClarkesCars.com for all their excellent car cleaning products. And also, friends, if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'll have one of those for a while. It just helps us lift us visibility-wise in the charts, help more people find us as we go into this Premier League season. All right, then, friends, Ipswich Town are up and running. They have a perfect record in the Premier League, and now they're going to try and make it 2 wins from 2 as Wes Burns and Conor Chapman come back to Portman Road tomorrow night. If you can't be there, follow it all with the boys. If you are going to be there, obviously give the boys a great send-off, a proper farewell for two legends of the club. And hopefully we'll be talking about another Ipswich Town win when we convene again later this week. Have a great start to your week, friends, and we'll speak to you next time.
Just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.